So you're with the Resistance?
Hello, what have we here?
I'm a big deal in the Resistance.
Well, hello, everybody.
Hello.
Well, we're going to go ahead and get started right now. This is the Star Wars panel with Resistance Radio and the 501st. I'm Mikey B., one of the hosts of Resistance Radio, and down here on the end we have...
Oh, I'm Matt Hoffman. I'm the CEO of the Rebel Legion Mos Espa base and the event coordinator for Blood Fin Gears.
And I'm Mike Harrison, the XO of Blood Fin Gears.
Right. And down here we have...
I'm Donya. I'm Mikey's co-host on Resistance Radio.
And I'm Eric. I'm also Mikey's co-host on Resistance Radio.
So before we get started into any of our conversation, I do want to talk a little bit about the 501st droid hunt. Just right off the bat, because that seems really exciting. You guys want to talk about it real quick?
Basically what it is, if you stop by the Star Wars Indiana booth, which is over in the corner over there, we'll have a badge, which we tried to have one here. We'll maybe get some later for you guys if you want it. But if you're here all 3 days, especially if you're here tomorrow, you come by, get the badge, wear it on your person tomorrow between 11 and 5, and stormtroopers or officers or various evil personnel will come around and try to find somebody with a badge. They'll take your badge from you and give you a coupon. You take that coupon back over to our booth, and you're in a drawing for some pretty cool books, some DK books about Star Wars that are pretty cool.
Yeah, I abuse my employee discount and get free books from DK Publishing. They're very nice. I have about 60 different books that people can win this weekend.
Awesome. DK does some of the Star Wars stuff too, so that's pretty cool. All right, and then also you guys can come check us out at the Resistance Radio booth. It's also a shared booth with MuggleCast, a Harry Potter podcast. We do have t-shirts, button packs, as well as some free media CDs with artwork, as well as episodes of Resistance Radio that you guys can check out. So going right into it, we want to talk about Stormtroopers today, guys. Just Stormtroopers, it's a Star Wars topic right away. And I do know that the 501st, they are a Stormtrooper costume group that does some great charity work. Do you guys want to tell us a little bit about the 501st history of it real quick?
We took notes.
Yeah. Well, it started out in 1997 and has grown exponentially since then. But basically, the 501st is the bad guy side of the Star Wars universe, whereas the Rebel Legion is the good guy side, obviously. And we're a charity costuming group that will... go to different events. We try not to do birthday parties or weddings or things like that, although we get those invitations all the time. But we'll come to things like this, or we'll go to cancer walks and just pretty much anything you can think of, people will invite us for. And just to promote awareness, we're promoting awareness for Star Wars, but we hope to bring attention to whatever event we're at by getting people to come as well. And a lot of things we do are for charity. Whether it's directly to us and we make the donation, or whether we're just helping to raise the money for the particular event we're at. So you've got the 501st, which is the international part of the bad guys. You've got the Rebel Legion, which is the international part of the good guys. But then here at the local level, we've got Blood Fin Garrison, which is most of Indiana. So we have around 75 members, I think, right now. And we've added, I think, 9 so far this year. So we're really growing quickly. And how many members does Mos Espa have?
We're at a 50-something.
Okay. So, and we do a lot of... Mos Espa and Bloodfin, the Star Wars Indiana, which is, you can go to starwarsindiana.com, that encompasses both of our groups. We troop together. That's not true everywhere. That's not true all over the world or all over the country. We're lucky enough to have a good relationship that you go to our booth and we're right next to each other and we have a lot of cross-membership.
Yeah, just about everyone now has a costume in both groups.
So that's breaking it down to the most local level is we're Bloodfin and Mos Espa. So we do those charities that we're invited to. A few years ago, we might do 5 or 6 a year. Now we're up to, we have something every weekend, and this weekend we have 5?
Yeah, 4 or 5.
Yeah, we have 4 or 5 events this weekend alone. That's how, and I'm sure it's got a lot to do with the new movie.
Maybe, I would guess.
I need to rent it. I can see
it. Yeah, there's a new movie out, if you guys didn't know. It's called Episode 7.
Star Trek. Okay.
Well, that's really cool. I love that the 501st does all this charity work. One of the things I did want to ask before we get to it is, I know my local garrison last night was part of Weird Al's concert, because he has a Star Wars song. and I know a bunch of the stormtroopers from there were on his. Do you guys get to do that by chance?
It is July the 7th at White River State Park. That's we do that whenever they're in town. We get the message saying, you know, this is when it's going to happen, and then you give them the list of they want what is it? A Vader, and then you can have three other pairs of whatever costumes you have. So it's either stormtroopers or sandtroopers or whatever, but they have to match. And so then we just let them know the day before how many people we have, and then the next day then we go.
That's pretty cool. Is it more like a drawing where you guys get to pick, or is it like, I really like you today, so you...
We're
it's like, I don't know, your favoritism.
You're on my good side, yes. As event coordinator, I'm very lucky in that people... are courteous and know that, you know, if they've done this before, they let the new people go. And right now we have so many new people. I forget how many.
We've got nine this year.
Yeah, nine this year. And so we give them the opportunity to go first because they haven't, you know, had the chance to participate yet. And then once it gets to, you know, a week or so before, then the people that have signed up on that waiting list, they get to take over the spots.
Very cool. So, I don't know if you guys have any questions for the 501st in general or any Stormtrooper questions, but I have one that I've been thinking about for a long time. Why is the aim so bad? Is it hard to see those helmets, or
something else?
Thank you
for your original question.
You know, and I don't think anyone's ever asked that question before, but it was just one of those things where it's like, come on, like Luke is standing right there in A New Hope, and the shots are just going completely everything at it. He's standing right there, and they just miss.
I'll give you an out-of-universe and in-universe answer to that, what I think. In the universe, it's really hard to see through. You've got this right here, so you've got next to no peripheral vision. When we're out there doing signings or taking pictures or whatnot, small kids will walk up to you and want to shake your hand or hug you or whatever, and you can't see them unless you have to tilt your head down. I'm sure it's the same way if you're trying to shoot something. It's really hard to see. Out of the universe, okay, you've got four or five heroes, and you've got 1,000 stormtroopers, so you don't want your stormtroopers hitting everything, because then, you know, the movie's over, basically.
Yeah.
So
although those First Order stormtroopers do a pretty good job.
They do. They hit people.
First Order stormtroopers.
They may have corrected that design flaw, the masks.
Yeah,
they are different now. The masks are different.
30 years between Jedi and Force Awakens.
Yeah, they figured out that design flaw.
Yeah, so, poor Jakku kind of got the rough end of the stick with that.
So, the armor has changed over the years. You know, I know when I was in college, ooh, a couple of years ago, 10 years ago, you know, I looked at Join the 501st, and everything I looked online was literally how to make, like, a vacuum seal box to be able to build your own armor, you know, create your own plastic for it and everything. And I'm like, that's way beyond my skill level. I'm just going to say, cool job, guys. I can't do it. But I know now you can. There's like a bonus.
Anabos,
they have their own set that you can buy. And isn't that based off the actual film cast?
It is. The thing you need to remember about joining either group, good guys or bad guys, is, yeah, stormtroopers are great. They're popular, and I would want to have one as well. But they're not your only option. They're expensive, certainly, and skill-intensive, really. But you can get a officer... you know, which is like a cloth uniform. You can get one of those pretty much close to complete for a couple $100, maybe.
Yeah, it's just it's just the jumpsuit and the boots, and then like the hat.
There are requirements. That's the thing about both our groups. About is that, and one of the things that sets our groups apart from, I don't know, some other groups maybe, is that in order to join either the 501st or the Rebel Legion, you have to have a screen accurate costume, and there's what's called a CRL, which I don't know what those letters stand for.
Costume Resource Library.
There you go. And so if I wanted to do a Darth Maul, I would go to the 501st.com, look up Darth Maul, and it would say, okay, your Darth Maul has to look like this, 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 and this. You can't have that. And if you meet those requirements, you send your pictures in, they get approved, and you're in. But you can't just go and buy, there are several knockoff companies, Rubies and FX and things like that, that make these Star Wars costumes, but aren't necessarily screen accurate. They're cheaper, but they're not screen accurate enough. They can be modified, some of them, to get into either one. So the stormtrooper that you're talking about used to be a bunch of guys in their garage making plastic, like you said, with a vacuum form machine, and was pretty expensive because that's all that was out there.
Right.
Last year, maybe say 2 years ago, a company called Anovos, A-N-O-V-O-S, got the official license from Lucasfilm to produce costumes.
And all those guys are our 501st members.
Yes, they are.
People that are in charge of it are 501st.
You do need to remember that just because you buy this costume from Anovos, that doesn't mean you're automatically in the 501st. That just means you've got something so accurate that you can tailor it to yourself and get approved, that it fits your particular body, whatever its shape is, tall, whatever, that's the most important thing. It needs to look right and it needs to fit you. So what I have might not fit Matt, what he has might not fit me. We make some alterations and we're good.
Right.
And the same can be said for the armor. The armor will come in a kit. You'll have two pieces for your forearm, two pieces for your chest. So it does take some work to fit it, put it together, make it fit yourself. But once you do that, then you can start doing the submission process.
So I love that it's kind of you guys are crafting your own, you're building your own stuff. Even though you buy a kit, you're still building it. I know the local garrison by me, they actually have
Where is that? Where are you from?
So I'm originally from California, but I live in Louisville, Kentucky now. And I know the Blue Sky Squad, they have a...
Mid-South Garrison.
Yeah, Mid-South Garrison. They have a Rancor that's like 15 feet tall, rock thing that they take to cons for photo ops. And I know the Derby City Squad is actually building a 15-foot tall AT-ST for this. So do you guys get together for different things like that also, or...?
We're working on that. Okay. It's one of those things where now that we're doing so many cons now, especially at least here in Indiana, we want to try to vary things up a little bit because then we have table and stuff and things you can look at, and we want to start having those kinds of interactives, you know, larger set pieces or things like that. We have the backdrop of the Millennium Falcon at our table. And we're looking at in the off season, we'll call it, even though it's not much of an off season anymore with the movies and everything. But we want to build the big action figure box, and so you can take pictures with that, and a couple other little projects.
If time and money was like no object at all, what would be like the dream prop to have to take to conventions?
Me personally, I think it'd be pretty cool to have the loading door from the Millennium Falcon, where that drops down. So even if you just had that little part right there, and you could drop it down, people could take pictures in front of that or pictures on it. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
I guess just don't drop it on anyone's foot. Right. We already learned how that could go wrong.
In Denver, they have a 3/4 scale X-wing.
Oh wow!
And that was they Lucasfilm had those commissioned for the 20th anniversary, and there's only 6 of them in the world, I think, and most of them you obviously can't get them. There's one guy that has one somewhere and somebody else has one. And Lucasfilm has most of them, the remainders. But Denver gets to keep this one, and they've added things to it. And it's got like a video on the front where you can play the video games while you're inside the cockpit, and the R2-D2 moves and stuff like that. That would be what I would want for, you know, jealous reasons.
Yeah, see, I can only speak to the conversation I had with the Derby City guys over pizza and beer, and they started talking about like literally making the turrets move, like rotors and stuff like that. So that could just be a pipe dream down the line, but I know like they were talking about it, like that would be really cool. I'll hop anyway I can.
There's a group in Nashville, Tennessee that are building a full size Millennium Falcon. That's a full scale Falcon. I think it's fullscalefalcon.com. My friend Chris Lee is working on that. And, Their plan is to build a full size Millennium Falcon that you can go inside, and they're gonna like sell hotel rooms in it or something that people spend the night in the Millennium Falcon, and the cockpit is done and it looks really cool. And I saw pictures of working on it this weekend. They're now working on the hallway from the cockpit into where the turrets are. So,
oh wow,
yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Well, moving away from the costume building. Obviously, since we're talking about stormtroopers and just all that stuff, what's your favorite stormtrooper from the series? Like type of trooper? You know, obviously,
the type of trooper.
Yeah, type of trooper. You know, we had
like
the one guy.
Like TK-543.
He was awesome.
Yeah, you know, well, there's the classic, you know, TK trooper. You got your scout troopers. You got your snow troopers.
Okay. Yeah, I like scouts.
I like the clone troopers from, actually, my first costume when I got into it was a clone trooper from the animated series. So, and I'll be honest, I picked only because I was like flipping through the book, and like, I like that paint scheme, I don't know anything about the character, obviously, and the one I eventually picked, which is Commander Stone, he's only in one episode of the cartoon itself, and he's not even named. They named him in the books, but not in the cartoon itself, but I like that paint scheme and wanted to paint that, so I picked that one. I'm partial to the Clone Troopers. Plus, the Clone Troopers, honestly, the animated Clone Troopers, they look like your buff. I mean, they're very, very V-shaped altogether, whereas like the modern stormtroopers, you're pretty much a tube. And like, so it makes you look cooler, I guess.
I will say I like those animated ones. Just like, he does like that loop, you know, the jump over the thing, and he just like destroys, you know, the tank right away.
Yeah, I can
very
that
cool.
One.
Well,
I'd be impressed.
I'd be impressed. You know, I'm going to say I'm kind of partial to the newest First Order troopers. I really like the look of them. I've heard they're kind of a pain to try to wear because it's got like tubing on the...
Charlie back there, who's leaving the room right now, who dropped off some droid hunt badges.
Bye, Charlie.
He will have his First Order trooper on tomorrow, hunting people down, playing droid hunt. So if you want to be...
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
Yeah, so if you want to be hunting down by Charlie tomorrow, we do have droid hunt badges if people want to come up at the end. We'll give those to you.
Yeah, I will say I like the First Order, but you know, what about you guys down here? What about these troopers? We also have the new Shadow Troopers coming out in Rogue One.
You know, I thought the question was still specific trooper. That so I racked my brain for like an hour coming up with like the coolest trooper in the Star Wars series, and I think I've got it. It's the Scout Trooper who gives Leia a run for money on the bikes in Jedi. That guy is probably my favorite. Because at the same time, you know, they're easy to fool. I think, like, stormtroopers in general, like, you know, hey, what happened? You know, what's going on? They can barely see. It's kind of fun. It's got a good comedy. But he did pretty well piloting that
speeder bike.
Speeder bike, yeah.
Made through the force, man.
Here's one thing I never understood about stormtroopers is that I've never seen a stormtrooper take a hit and not go down. Like, what's the armor for? What would it stop?
It stops rocks. Wait,
no, it does. No,
it did stop the rocks, right? Apparently.
But the Muppets killed him.
That's right. No sticks.
So, nothing. You know, that seems cumbersome for what you get out of it.
It protects against something. Donnie, what's your favorite stormtrooper?
UV rays, maybe.
You know what? I'm actually really partial to the First Order ones as well. I wasn't too keen on the design, like, the first time I saw it. I was a little bit dubious about it. And then as I saw it playing out in the movie, I thought it looked really cool. So I think I'm a little bit partial to the First Order troopers.
You can definitely see when you watch these new movies and the clips we're seeing from Rogue One, the difference in mobility that you have now than what we had in the previous movies. You definitely saw in the at 4, 5, and 6, you definitely saw a lot of this, you know. And the new ones are definitely made for movement because they want actors in them. I don't know if you know or not, but probably do. But in the prequels, 1, 2, and 3, there wasn't a single live actor in any clones at all. Every single one of those was animation. So they didn't have to worry about that then. And that's what made making the clone armor so tough, is because they didn't have something to go off of. They had to kind of go from scratch and just go from what they could see on the screen. But the new ones definitely are much more geared towards mobility. And what you were saying about the gaskets in the new ones, that is definitely something that they've had to work on, because when they first shipped them out, they had hard rubber gaskets in between, you know, in the joints and whatnot, all the black parts you see. And they were really stiff and really even hard to put on. Charlie, one of the first times we put his on, it took us 40 minutes.
Yeah,
it took us 40 minutes and two of us to help Charlie get his stuff on. So they've gotten better at it. They've changed some lighter rubber and some cloth and things like that to make it better. But it's definitely different. But I personally love the new design. I think it's great.
Yeah. What about the so no one chose the Shadow Trooper. Has everyone seen the Rogue One trailer out there? No, yeah, I see people. Yeah. So there's this new Shadow Trooper. It's all black. He's got a crazy mask coming up.
Is that the Shadow Trooper or a Death Trooper?
You know, I think I've read a Shadow Trooper, but is that
Shadow Trooper is something from the EU?
EU, yeah.
But I think they're calling these Death Troopers.
Are they calling them Death
Troopers? I think that's what they are.
It's a little scarier.
Yeah.
Well, the mask is pretty scary. It's almost got like a Darth Vader style on it, like coming forward.
Very different.
So, you know, what do you guys think of that right there?
I think they're cool. Yeah. I mean, I like that, and I like the tank troopers that they had too. There's that one tank scene, and there's new stormtroopers for that group as well. And it's always funny because, like, you'll see people on the fan boards or whatever be like, why are there new stormtroopers in a movie that takes place?
Do they talk like that?
They do. That is what they sound like.
That's how I want to make that sound.
That's what they make fun of. But you know, that's, and well, why are there new stormtroopers in a movie? Because you didn't see them. And it's like, well, come on. You didn't see every single stormtrooper in the galaxy that came out in episode 4. So it's just like, you know, let it go and enjoy the cool new things, because that's what it's all about.
You know what I love, and this might not be, I mean, does it count as a stormtrooper, like the Imperial Guard, like the bright, I call them Imperial Guard.
Oh, the Royal Guards?
The Royal Guards, like the completely red outfit, that. Those guys are awesome.
We've got one in our garrison.
Yeah.
Two.
Maybe two. I don't know if Patrick's wearing his tomorrow or not.
Yeah, they're pretty cool. I don't know. That seems awfully. He's super hot in it. I mean, like.
Yeah. It's
nothing but a.
Like
physically.
Physically.
I'm just saying. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's slimming and you like.
They do look good. Cool guys.
It's basically a quilt and a bucket on your head.
Yeah.
So there's no getting around that.
No. And it's and my thing is that the reason why I do rebel costumes primarily is because no helmet fits my head. None. It does not happen. That's why I do Rebel Fleet Trooper, because anything can fit under that helmet. And I usually, when I wear my X-Wing, I just hold it on the side because the helmet doesn't fit my head. And I've tried to put on that Royal Guard helmet, and it just pushes it. If you do not have a small head and a small nose, you do not fit in that helmet. It just sits, it's like a yarmulke on top of my head.
I guess maybe that's why they didn't talk in the movies, because they just kind of come on.
Well, the cool thing, is that what a lot of people do is that they'll take fans, and they'll put the hoses to the fans like right up into the helmet, and so then, and to help with the
ventilation,
the fogging and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, so now going back to the costuming, now that you mentioned this fans, like, so do you set up like fans throughout the whole helmet or in the costume, or what do you guys do? Because I know it's got to be, especially if you're out there in the summer and the heat.
It depends. Some helmets will allow that kind of room where you can have a couple. Some people have one, some people have none. It depends on what you think you can handle. You're going to drip sweat for the most part if it's relatively warm. But there's fans. A lot of them put the microphone system in there too, so that takes up a little bit of room. My clone, my nose is like this on my clone, and there's no getting around it. But I don't have. I've got a microphone here, but I don't have. I don't have any fans.
My Tusken Raider had a fan, and then I broke it because my head couldn't fit in. So yeah.
What type of fans do you use? Are they like computer fans?
Yeah, little
computer fans that I run.
Yeah.
Just a little tiny thing to spend.
Hey, Matt, if you want to feel better about the fact that you can't get the helmet over your head, I'm probably too short to be a stormtrooper.
That's okay. And we are, Jeannie, who's a wonderful, wonderful woman and in our group, and she gets that all the time. She is a stormtrooper, and people come up and, oh, are you a little short for a stormtrooper? I've never heard that.
That's a great line. That's a great line.
I know, right? So yeah, it happens and it's fine. There's no, not everybody is 6 feet tall, and we just wear what you want to wear. That's all it, except for Chewbacca.
Yeah, I think Chewbacca probably is the only one that has actual height requirements.
Yes, he is the only one that has a height requirement.
When it's all said and done, whether you use lifts or whether you use stilts or whatever, you have to be at least 7 feet tall.
Yep.
Oh wow.
But everybody else, it doesn't matter what shape or size you are. As long as your costume fits you, you can get in.
We have 6 foot tall Jawas.
That's kind of scary.
It is.
I was like,
But I guess in a book or a comic book somewhere that there was something called a King Jawa, and that's where they come from. Is that there's like 6 foot tall Jawas somewhere, and so that's why it's okay.
All right, I'll take that.
It's like the good ones for Mario. There's like the big ones in the big tall world.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
There you go.
Yes, and that's why there's no EU anymore.
That's that. Too soon. Anyway, let's talk about the evolution of stormtroopers in the films. So we're introduced to the stormtroopers in A New Hope. Actually, sandtroopers early on, because they're the ones that are on Tatooine with Luke.
Yeah. Tantive IV, so they're the stormtroopers that came in through. They were first.
Oh, yeah, actually, yeah, the ones that came first on the 10 and 4, you're right. So the ones right.
I'm wearing this costume, so I know who that is.
Yeah, it was you who said first, I'm sorry. Anyway, so we're introduced to stormtroopers, these menacing characters that come right out in the very beginning, and then they're seen throughout the whole thing. They've obviously changed throughout each and every film. You know, you see introduced to snowtroopers in Empire Strikes Back, the scout troopers in Return of the Jedi, and they just evolve. So, why are they evolving? Like, is there different ones for every planet that you think of? Because we're seeing new ones, like you said. You know, we have Death Troopers coming out, and there's Flame Troopers that we saw in the First Order. Like, is there just literally detachments for everywhere in each planet?
I think it's just need. I think it's environmental need. You know, because there's space. You can see there's space troopers outside in the Death Star in Episode 4 also. When the Falcon's coming into the docking bay, that there's two space troopers down there too. So I think it's just environmental need.
And that's much like, you know, our modern military, that you're going to have different uniforms for different places. As far as going from film to film, I don't want to jump ahead of you, but as far as going from film to film, you've probably got, you know, you got 20 guys in a room doing drawings and doing you know, their dream trooper and all that. They throw them all at George or whoever, and he says, yeah. And he probably wants to put as many as he can on the screen because they look cool. And, you know, obviously toys and all that. So.
Yeah.
The toys, yeah. That's probably, isn't that why we have Ewoks?
Yeah.
It is.
So we really get the Stormtrooper origins, I guess, in episode 2 at the Clone Army, right? So when did the Stormtroopers change from being part of the Republic to the bad, becoming the bad guys? Yeah, what would you see that? Because obviously,
you don't see it. You know, well, you sort of see it in Rebels. There's the as the clones got older, since they mature faster than normal folk, they die off quicker.
Are you asking about when they went from good to bad? From good to bad?
No, when they went from clones to regular enlisted.
Oh, yeah, well, or both good to bad, because you know they started off as Republic troopers, right? Clone troopers, yeah. And then they joined the Empire. But you know, it was the Empire necessarily bad when it first started, because it was.
Well, I like to refer to Star Wars in general as the story of Palpatine. Okay, forget Luke. Okay, but Palpatine is there from one through six, and it's basically his story. So yeah, he's. Okay, I do Palpatine, but
are you wearing the thing tomorrow?
I'm gonna, yeah.
You're walking around as Palpatine tomorrow?
Tomorrow, when he's in Palpatine, you have to come by the booth and see his Emperor Palpatine, because it is awesome.
It is pretty cool.
I'm kind of scared now.
I don't want to ruin it for anybody. He floats. He doesn't walk. He's like this.
That's pretty cool.
Anyway, so, Order 66 in episode 3 is when he basically flips the switch and he says, kill all Jedi, and now we're bad.
Yeah.
But he doesn't think he's bad. Palpatine thinks he's good. He's doing what he thinks is right for the galaxy.
I think he knows he's bad.
No, I don't think. I think you're wrong.
Whatever he did to his former Sith Master, I think he knows that he's bad.
That's a means to an end. Order for the galaxy. That's all he wanted, sir.
Wherever the galaxy. So I want to go ahead and open it up for a few questions from people in the audience. I know we have a microphone.
Yes, we do. It is with the beautiful Slytherin in the third row.
There it is. Thank you.
Gina.
So does anyone have any questions for anyone from the 501st or anyone from Resistance Radio? Let's see, we have one right over here.
I'm a Hufflepuff, so you have to leave. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I'm a Hufflepuff too.
I'm also a Hufflepuff, and she is too.
Awesome.
All
right.
So, there's been speculation that the new Ultimate Sith Lord Snoke is actually being referenced in the movie when Palpatine's telling the story to Anakin to save the one he loves and the guy who could influence the Midi-chlorians to create life. There's speculation that Snoke. What do you guys think of that? That he survived when Palpatine tried to
kill him?
You mean so? Snoke is Plagueis. Now I can tell you this. Like, we just dedicated an entire episode to Snoke being Plagueis, and I was convinced. The only thing that I would say I'm not convinced on that anymore, because I love that theory, because it is part of the films, it's part of the canon and everything, is that Pablo Hidalgo from Star Wars said, just get over it, it's not true. And so, like, I'm like, but that's not to say that, you know, they don't tell us lies, so we don't, you know, speculate and just kind of destroy everything.
There's a wonderful fan theory that Snoke is Porkins.
I can buy into that one. Just Porkins, he didn't actually die.
That's my vote.
Porkins is one of my favorite X-Wing pilots, I will say.
Because this is the story of Palpatine being positive, and it's correct.
So it's Palpatine, not Plagueis.
Next question.
Anyone else have any questions related to Star Wars, the new films, anything out there?
Sure.
We got one right here, all right.
What do you think about the speculation that Rey is Anakin reincarnated?
You guys want to do
it? We're going to get this to Diane. She lit up. Like,
oh, okay.
What?
Yeah, do it.
I don't know. I don't know that I like that necessarily.
But then Luke could say, you're my father.
Oh, that would be really weird.
My hope is that she's a Kenobi.
You know, we've got someone on the hypeable staff who thinks the exact same thing.
Absolutely. I hope that. Because I think that something happened in Clone Wars with Satine, and that she is Obi-Wan's granddaughter.
So she'd be like an Obi-Wan meets Mandalorian type thing?
Sure.
Yeah?
Yeah, so she'd be like one quarter Mando?
I'm going to say she's Luke's daughter.
I'm just gonna say Luke's daughter.
I'm gonna say Luke's daughter. Like, I know that's not true. That's too obvious.
It's tough,
but
because it is so obvious. You think, well, would they do that? Make it so obvious?
Yes,
but maybe they did. If she is the reincarnation of Anakin, then What's that make? Then they're all related somehow in a weird way. Like, yeah. I don't know.
And like I said, Lucas, actually, you're my father.
Right.
So there's that.
Is there a precedent for reincarnation in the Star Wars universe?
I have not.
Not that I've seen. Other than you have the whole Immaculate Conception of Anakin. You know,
right. Which is questionable.
He was just born, you know. The Metachlorians, they haven't really talked about
Anakin's Contra and put it in all that Star Trek.
Yeah, they really haven't talked about, you know, Metachlorians since the prequels. So we'll see. I think it's the obvious choice of Luke, you know, she's Luke's daughter. I love Rey. She's one of my favorite characters. So.
Okay, Mikey says that on every single Resistance Radio episode without fail. He manages to get into every single
episode. We had an episode about Watto the other day. He was like, by the way, Rey is Luke's daughter.
It just has to get there. You know, it's true. Rey is Luke's daughter.
I think it'd be best if Rey was nobody's daughter. I mean, she's somebody's daughter, but I think that it'd be cool for a hero tale if she's just, you know, some kid with cool powers.
Well, we have the flashback where we see her, you know, being handed off to to what's his name?
Umgar Plot.
So drop that seed and then not pay it off later would be crazy. I think you'll find out who it is.
Yeah.
Well, and she also has that whole flashback scene where you see, you know, in the book they talk about seeing Vader and Luke battling and that. You know, she hears Yoda and Obi-Wan's voice. You know, there's just a whole lot that's going on there. And she even sees Luke in that, too, you know, with the hand touching R2-D2. So there's definitely some type of connection between her and Luke. What it is, we don't know.
I mean, these are the superstars of the Force here in this universe, though. You'd see them if you had any kind of prophetic vision that meant anything, had any gravitas.
Yeah, that's something to mention, too, is I'm pretty sure that I've read in a couple different places that the visions that she had aren't necessarily flashbacks. Some of them are from the future. I think that scene we see with Kylo Ren and all the other knights, I don't think that's a flashback. I think I read that that's going to happen.
Really?
That's what I think.
That would be cool.
I'm 42% sure that's correct.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be really cool because the one thing that really disappointed me about The Force Awakens is that we did not get to see the Knights of Ren. I really wanted to see
them. I still think that they should have called Episode 7 Episode 10.
Just to mess with
because there's just so much that happens between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens that they should have named it Episode 10. So then at some point they could go back and do prequels to the sequels of the sequels.
So there would be sequels, prequels, sequel.
They would just be both prequels and sequels.
There would be
prequels to the new ones.
We need a new one.
We need a new one.
All right. All right.
They'll start using like 0.1.
Yeah, but yeah, I still think they should have called Episode 10. I thought that would have been really
cool. Well, that's kind of what, Rogue One is going to be. It takes us up to 10 minutes before Episode 4.
It's like episode
3.95, maybe, or something like that. So, any other questions from anyone else in the audience right now before we jump into more Stormtrooper talk, or anything about the Phobos?
We got
two people. We'll go this one, and then we'll come back to you, okay?
I also heard that Knights of
Ryan
scene, I'm pretty sure that is a flash
forward.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Just
to...
Well, it's JJ, so
that
has to be a flash
forward. She says I know what I'm talking
about. Do you think Kylo Ren was persuaded to the dark side or intentionally went over to bring balance to the Force?
Ooh.
That's a philosophical question. I'm not really sure.
Kylo Ren?
Depends on how good he was at stats. He's like, oh, there's unbalance here. I gotta go over the dark side.
I bet it was the same sort of Anakin tale.
Yeah.
That, you know, he wasn't getting the attention from his parents, and, you know, that Snoke was giving him stuff faster than Luke was as his teacher. So I think that's what it was. It's just that lure of awesome.
Young people are easily corrupted. He's easily persuaded, and that's probably right.
You know, I'll say this. If you read Bloodlines by Claudia Gray,
I haven't read that.
It's amazing. Well, no spoilers.
It's such a great author.
It's an amazing book, by the way. I encourage everyone to read that if you haven't had a chance. It's probably like the best thing to read before Episode 8. It sets up like the beginning of the First Order and kind of all the corruption and everything there. And also it kind of deals with, for lack of a better word, Leia's daddy issues. So it's pretty interesting to read.
And Lost Stars.
Yeah, and Lost Stars is phenomenal. Great. But really, the reason why I want to bring this up, because you're asking about kind of how Kylo Ren fell. You can see it early on. Like, in The Force Awakens novelization, you know, Leia mentions to Han that it was always Snoke. He was always there, kind of feeding him lines like, hey, the dark side's better. We got cookies. Just kind of something like that. Something like that the whole time. But really, like, I would say when I read Bloodlines, you know, the whole thing of... Leia's parentage, like, no one really knew. They always thought she was just adopted, you know, being like Organa and everything like that. But when it gets dropped on that she is the daughter of Vader, you have to understand, like, the whole point is, like, she's supposed to become, like, this big leader in the New Republic, and then she's the daughter of Vader, who was, like, everyone hates. And then he finds out, because it's, like, essentially, like, Twitter feeds. Like, everyone's just, like, spamming it out. It's like, new gossip, Princess Leia Organa is actually the daughter of Darth Vader, and it's like, she's like, I have to tell Ben. Like in her mind, like, the first thing she's like, I gotta tell Han what happened, and I need to tell Ben. So you just know, like, this stuff is coming out to him, and he's gonna be like, why didn't you tell me? And he's gonna resent it. Yeah. So I definitely think it's probably a combination of Snoke and bad parenting, you know, something like that.
That really surprised me about Force Awakens. Like, thinking about it more critically and just being like, oh yeah, like, Han and Leia actually weren't good parents to him. Like, you know, she was busy with politics, he was busy with his...
He's Han Solo.
The idea that they have this kid that they never have time for, it's
time to live with Uncle Luke, you know.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Like, you find out in Bloodlines that he doesn't even live with them at all. He's up with Luke somewhere.
So there's definitely interesting. I would love to see more, whether it be in books or comics or just something else, to kind of see how Kylo Ren felt. But it's definitely going to be more along the lines of something with Anakin's fall. It's not something that he's, like, been pulled there because of balance in the Force. At least I hope that's not what it is, but it could be. But I think it's more just, like, the constant nagging, you know, it's easy to corrupt them, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll types of things. Like, the dark side's cooler, so.
Yeah, there was a theory of that he intentionally went over there to, like, infiltrate them for the good side, that he was supposed to, you know...
Double agent?
Yeah, double agent kind of thing. And then when during the scene at the end of Force Awakens, that Han was, like, saying, you know, when he says, I don't know if I can do this, and Han's like, oh, you can, or whatever, that was the way to show that he actually was, you know, on the dark side and following that path, even though he's really, like, a double agent.
I like that.
Okay. Yeah. What happened? I don't know. I haven't read spoilers.
Yeah, we don't want to talk about what happened too soon. Anyway, we had another one. Someone else over here
in the back corner.
Yeah, we gotta run all the way over there. Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Thanks, Gina.
Just an opinion first about the 30 years between movies. Wouldn't it be great if they had, like, a 5-season, 10-episode HBO budget tone to cover that?
I would be very surprised with the new deal that Disney has with Netflix. I would be very surprised if we don't see something live action and see it on Netflix.
Yeah.
The question is, the previously canon expanded universe, is there any characters you would love to see come back?
Man.
There's too many.
I really want to see Grand Admiral Thrawn. He's my favorite of all the EU, and I do that costume as well. And
supposedly he's going to be on Rebels this
season.
Yeah, that's right.
That'd be great. And I hope that doesn't, like, quench the thirst that he doesn't appear in the movies. In some movies, at some point, if you want to read the Tarkin book, that's probably the closest what you think Thrawn will be like. He's very analytical and an amazing strategist, and so in this new universe anyway, that's probably the closest we're going to get for a little bit anyway, but I'd love to see Thrawn.
Yeah, I honestly didn't read a lot of the EU.
I
read the Zahn trilogy, and I read when the New Jedi Order, like the first couple books of that one. It's a long series, and I think that was my thing. It's like, well, these aren't really canon, and I know it's not going to be that big of a thing, so I didn't really read them. I would like to see like Kyle Katarn and Jan Ors, that pair, you know, show up in something. That would be fine.
And would they bring it back to our organizations too? All that old EU stuff, I say old EU stuff, is all still approvable. It's not Disney canon as far as what they want, how they want to narrate their story. But all those costumes are still approvable with us, with both our organizations. We still love them, and we like to see them.
That's cool.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. For me, Mara Jade. hands down. I love Mara Jade so
much.
I'd
be real surprised if you didn't see her pretty soon.
I know. I'm still holding out hope that she will come into the series, into the movies at some point, because I loved her. Like, every single book that she was in, I owned. I actually still own them. They're in little boxes in my parents' attic. I had to go and sort through all of that stuff because they're moving house. So I kind of went up to the attic and was like, I've got boxes of Star Wars stuff that I forgot about completely. This is the best thing ever.
So as someone who likes Mara Jade, because most of my friends, and I don't know if this goes for you too, but my friends who didn't like Force Awakens, and there's not a lot, but my friends
not
that
anymore.
Did, yeah. but my friends that didn't like Force Awakens were the people that were like really into Mara Jade and really into that storyline of Mara and Luke's kids and all of that stuff. And I wanted to know if you as a Star Wars fan didn't like that or had issues with that, of jettisoning that storyline.
That's the problem. My biggest thing with Legends, the novelization after the, you know, that is no longer canon and just kind of gone, is there's so many characters that I fell in love with, I grew up reading about and everything. Like, the, you know, one, Han and Leia are better parents in those books. You know, they have three kids and everything. In fact, my cat's named after Jaina Solo. You know, it's gone.
What's her name?
Jaina Solo. You know, Jaina. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, I would say, like, I can't get any of those characters back, at least not in the way they set it up. There might be characters similar to it. I would like characters that they could bring back from the next universe would be someone like Revan. They did mention Darth Bane in... was it Clone Wars when Yoda went to Moroban? It used to be Korriban, and what everyone knew it as, but they call it Moroban now. So they did bring, you know, Darth Bane back, but I'd like to see like Revan and some of that Old Republic kind of storyline, because that was really cool stories, you know, and the KOTOR games and everything. But I would like to see some of that make its way back in, just because I don't think 3,000 years before would have any effect on the current storyline, so I don't think Disney would have a problem with that.
Well, good news is they still own it all, and they can still pick and choose what they want and throw it into the new canon. And the thing to remember with a lot of people that are ticked off about the EU not being involved, you still have those stories. Yep. They're still there.
Yeah.
They're there for you to enjoy. You don't have... Do they have to be included in the new stuff? I mean, maybe if you want them to be, but they're still there for you to read and enjoy. So,
yeah. So, as someone who did love Mara Jade and that whole storyline with all of the kids, going into The Force Awakens, I loved The Force Awakens. I thought it was really good. It was a really nice return back to that same feeling of the originals. I kind of resigned myself to the fact that we probably wouldn't get Mara and Jason and Jaina and all of those characters prior to that, because we already knew small amounts before we got to The Force Awakens about the characters. But like you just said, Mark, like, we still have those books to go back to. It's not like they don't exist anymore at all. You can still go out and buy them.
Yeah.
So those stories are still there. I can still go back and enjoy them, but I can also equally enjoy The Force Awakens and what they're doing with Rey and Finn and Poe and all of these new characters that they've given us, because, yeah, they can take little bits of inspiration from the EU, but they don't have to stick to it, like, strictly, which I think would have potentially kind of cut them down to those stories, and it wouldn't have been as creative. They couldn't have done as many new things with it as they might have liked as they go through the rest of the trilogy.
Writers and directors wouldn't have had the freedom to be creative to give something fantastic.
Yeah.
If they have to do this. You have to do this, this, and this. So.
Yeah, I would rather them not be using the expanded universe as their blueprint for the movies. I would like them to take some vague inspiration from it, which you do see a little bit.
Right.
If you've read the books, you can see it in The Force Awakens. And we will probably continue to see it, but I prefer that not to be like a carbon copy of the expanded universe, because I don't want to know what's coming up as well. I don't want to know what's going to happen.
Matt is just the opposite. He searches out spoilers. he knew everything about Force Awakens.
MakingStarWars.net is my...
It's a great website.
Oh my God,
yeah.
It's a great website.
If you are
addicted to spoilers like I am, it was so dead on. Except for like one or two little things of the whole movie, and I needed to know the spoilers. I'm like, I need to know that it's going in the right direction, and that when I get there, I'm not going to be disappointed. And I wasn't, even going in knowing everything, literally everything about that movie. It actually, no, the only thing I didn't know was If you haven't seen it, you're on the wrong panel. the only thing that I didn't know about was Rey and Kylo fighting at the end. That's the only thing that I didn't know about, and that was a wonderful surprise. But
I'm the opposite. I usually, like a month or so before something big like that will come out, I'll stop watching trailers, because that's when they really ramp up. They start throwing in all the international trailers, all the TV spots, through four or five of each of those. So I stop watching that stuff because I want to know less and less. I want to know, you know, the general outline, but I don't want to know everything.
Yeah, I have to know everything.
Yeah.
And everything
about
it.
Because
you're
a child.
Yeah, I am.
I agree with you. I want to know everything. But we are almost out of time. We got about 2 minutes left. Any last thoughts on anything we've talked about, guys?
I just remembered how the stormtroopers didn't do their homework about the sand people. How Obi-Wan was able to, you know, quickly just say, "Oh, you know, sand people, red and single file." So I had their numbers, and then that was a missed opportunity for the stormtroopers to really.
So stormtrooper education needed.
We need some stormtrooper, you know, classes.
They probably have some standardized testing that they should.
Yeah, I don't know if they take classes on it.
Because I think that those guys, did all those guys come down from Star Destroyer, or were they there already? All the sand troopers?
They could have been an outpost already.
Yeah. I think they would.
Well, they had sand.
They were sent down looking for droid. They could have landed anywhere. I think they were probably.
Yeah.
I was still thinking of Kent, you know, come to desert from, you know, Space Mountain.
Yeah.
Well, they looked cool while they were in it anyway.
Well, yeah. That is Tupac, right?
It is.
All right, guys, so we're going to wrap it up. Reminder, we do have the droid hunt starting tomorrow. We have some really cool stuff here. So please feel free to come up, grab a badge. We also have some merch at the Resistance Radio booth right over there in Podcast Alley. We also have some free episode CDs you guys can pick up, as well as some Harry Potter buttons, too. So, guys, thank you all for coming out, and my name is Mikey.
And I'm Matt.
I'm Mike.
I'm Donya.
And I'm Eric. And once again, that's booth 346 for Resistance Radio. And thank you all for coming. This was our first live podcast, so thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
If you are interested in joining either one of these organizations, just check out StarWarsIndiana.com. That's our website for both of us.
And we have a panel on Sunday at
noon-ish.
Around there.
Check it out.
Oh, and may the force be with you all.
And also
and with you.